Well, good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Today is the 21st day of July 2020, and my name is Peter Wickham. It's good to be joining you this morning. So happy that I can be in your company. Myself and John Stout will be with you until 2 p.m. Hoping that you know our call number is 434-1790, and that you can also reach us using the chat, 266-IVOB. Our email address is peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. Those are the ways you can reach me, and I'm hoping that you will make good use of our opportunity to converse, since it's been a while since we've had an opportunity to chat. The conversation this morning, I want to start with the usual preparatory remarks, which I often make to start things off. And I want to speak to what I see are the triple challenges facing CARICOM today, COVID, LEAC, and Guyana. And I want to speak very briefly in relation to those three issues, using up the initial 10 minutes that I am allotted. So let's start with COVID. I think Barbados is doing reasonably well, all things considered. I do, however, have a concern, and this relates directly to the approach that one can say is being taken by our COVID czar, Mr. Richard Carter. You know, in life, there are several ways to motivate people. You can use a stick, or you can use a carrot. And sadly, I think that our czar, Mr. Carter, is a gentleman for whom I have considerable respect, seems to be particularly disposed to the stick and not the carrot. So I listened to him last night on the news as he berated the population for being not bad behaved and naughty. And my mind was taken back to the bad old days when my parents would sit me down in a chair and chastise me for having been naughty, for having done something that I should not have done. And for that, I was being chastised. Quite frankly, I am now 52 years old. There are several people in Barbados who are a lot older than me. There are some who are a lot younger. But I don't think that we appreciate the idea of being chastised at this age. And I think that when you come to the stage where you are chastising a nation, you certainly have to be very, very careful. I think that Mr. Carter has some challenges regarding the way that he communicates with a population in a situation like this. And I appreciate that his responsibility is an awesome one. But I also believe that there is something called tact, there's something called diplomacy. And quite frankly, I think that last night's tirade was counterproductive, because the conversation this morning, as far as I can see, is dominated by people expressing concerns already on the chat about the manner in which he spoke to people, the manner in which he chided people, and the manner in which he berated people, and not the more fundamental issues of social distancing. I think that many of you know that currently I'm in France, and here in France, we had a similar conversation with the president, which is Emmanuel Macron, who was concerned about the fact that we're having spikes in some of the regions of France, about the fact that there are still people in buildings who are not wearing masks, about the fact that there are people who are traveling on public transportation and not wearing masks. And we were essentially told that all of these things would be enforced, and that there would also be fines and penalties attached for persons who do not comply. That approach was one which did not use the carrot either. But at the same time, I got the impression that Emmanuel Macron was in this with me. So he said, as citizens of France, we need to do this and we need to do that, as distinct from you guys are bad behaved and I wouldn't be caught dead at a counter serving alcohol with a person who was en masse. I think that we need to get real about this. We need to understand that we are facing some awesome challenges, but at the same time, there is a way in which you speak to people, and there's a way in which you can be more effective and less effective. But I think enough has been said about that. On the issue of LEAC, I'm told that there was a very productive detail yesterday. The challenge, of course, is that in all of this, I'm listening to third-hand information from Antigua Radio, in which there was agreement regarding sale of shares for a dollar, and the sale of assets that have to be valued in relation to three planes that Barbados, St. Vincent, and the others have an interest in. So the process is ongoing. I've always been a supporter of LEAC. I've always been a supporter of the regional dream, but I also appreciate that Barbados has had some financial challenges recently and LEAC has not helped in the situation. I also appreciate that there is always in life a distance between what one wants to do and what one is able to do. And I also appreciate very much the fact that in all of this, Prime Minister Motley has said as little as possible. preferring to communicate directly with the leaders, and that's how I think it should be. I do feel that we have heard too much about what needs to happen or what is happening through the regional media that has been conveyed through persons and other individuals. And it is often challenging to get the true story or to hear the reality when you have insults being hurled across the Caribbean seas using social media and other regular media. I really feel that that is something that needs to be brought to an end. And I think that the sooner that leaders speak to themselves, the sooner that board members speak to themselves, and the less that the communication is directly through us, we will have a better idea of what's going on, and we will have a better time, excuse me, in relation to dealing with a lot of these issues that have to be dealt with. So that's the situation with the app. And finally, Guyana. Chief Justice Roxanne George yesterday delivered essentially a rebuke legally to all of the positions that had been taken by the appellant. So we are back to square one, so to speak. The appellant has said that they will seek legal redress elsewhere, so they go to the Guyana Appeals Court today. It will be interesting to see what the Guyana Appeals Court has said. Justice George's judgment was, I thought it was an excellent judgment. It spoke to all the issues in a very comprehensive way. I think if nothing else, this is proving the level of legal jurisprudence, certainly within that rests within the Caribbean. And the judgments that are being presented, certainly the two that I've listened to from the CCJ and from Justice George, present facts, cases, and I think will provide good legal precedent for students to follow in years to come if similar issues arise. But one of the critical things about Justice George's statement, though, was that it was pretty clear to me that she was expressing concern about the manner in which this issue is going on and on, the manner in which issues are being relitigated in different courts and by different people and different individuals. And she made it clear that this is not a practice that the court would take kindly to, because ultimately it is a waste of the court's time. So she said that she wanted to see, or she was hoping that there would be an end to this process of selective litigation in which matters which have already been dealt with and put to rest are relitigated. And in the course of her judgment, she identified several issues which have been subject to the court's decision and have already been relitigated. I understand this strategy is part of the APNU AFC's process of delaying, because that has been their strategy from the beginning, keeping things at bay and trying to see how long they can take to bring this matter to rest. And I think it's unfortunate. I think that the fact that we're still having this conversation several months later is particularly unfortunate. I think the fact that the Americans and the OAS is now meeting, CARICOM is considering sanctions. I think that all of these things are indeed unfortunate. And as I said before, it serves us well to know the kind of electoral madness that can go on in the Caribbean. And I think it helps us understand what we need not repeat. Let me just repeat, as I have said before, I certainly stand with the people of Guyana. I think that it is a Caribbean issue, and I believe that we all need to take an active interest in the matter, because it could happen here tomorrow. So before John puts up his finger, that's it for me for the time being, and I'm happy to take your calls. Remember, 434-1790, the chat is active, 266-IVOB. Feel free to use both of those, and you can also email me directly if you so desire on peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. Good morning and welcome to the first caller.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Wickham. Hello.
Good morning.
Yeah, how are
good
you doing?
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning, sir. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I made a call to the program yesterday, and I had two questions. One was for the police, and the other one was for the army. Will the police answer the question? Because I was concerned about how long the investigation was taking the officers in connection with the soldier who, you know, unfortunate incident at the State Air Police Station. Will they answer me? Because they put an article in today's paper, so I am happy with that. The other thing I'm concerned about now, and this is for the BDF. I would like the public relations officer at the BDF to let us, the former BDF soldiers, know what is the retirement age of a BDF soldier. They say it is 45 when you do 15 years. I want to know what age Like if you do 15 years and you get paid at 45 pension, if you do less than 15 years, I want to know what age you will get paid at. Because the BDF want to mix up the BDF pension with the old age pension, and that cannot work. Because the amount of time a soldier works during the week is about 120 hours. So if you retire the fellas at 45, for doing 15 years, you return them at 45. We guys that did 10 years, I want to know what is the retirement age for us. It can't be when we get 67, because the working times in the BDF is different to the normal for the hour week, which we will refer to like the old age pensioners. You copy?
Okay. I do. Sir, let me ask you a couple of questions. Firstly, are you receiving a pension now, having retired at 45, specific to the BDF?
No, I haven't received a pension. What? I left there in 1995, and I can be exact with you. They paid the pensions in, 2008. So what the former administration did was, when they realized that a lot of guys had done 10 years, they carry the qualifying age to 15 years to exclude us. So now they're saying, if you want a pension now, saying that you don't do 15 years, you're going to get it when you reach age 67. Mr. Vickham, that is so wrong. Because we were in the Army, along with the fellas that did 15 years, working 120 hours a week. You cannot put that time with the old age pension time to determine what thing you will pay us. We should be getting paid until we reach 55. And it is so, you know, Mr. Vickham, some of the guys that mean we left there 25 years ago and can't get a pension from the Army. And I would like the chief of staff to come on the radio today and address that, either he or the public relations officer. It is so bad.
Sir, have you worked since?
Have I worked since? Yes. I leave there, and then I was working in construction as a checker. But I never received not one single cent from the Army after working 10 years and 3 months in the Army. Not a cent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If a person works 10 years in the Army now, this is after the changes have been made, would that person be pensionable now, or they're still not pensionable until 15 years?
If you work 10 years in the Army now,
right.
You won't get, and you retire at 45, you won't get a pension. But if you were 15 years, the qualifying age for the pension is you got to do 15 years. If you do other than that, you got to wait till the people that get paid, like the old age pensioners.
Okay. All right. So I think I am understanding the position that you are coming from now. I think I'm understanding the way it works. The qualifying bar for pension is basically 15 years and not 10. And because you have been only there for 10 years, you don't qualify. My understanding was that it was 2008 when the new regulations were imposed that allowed for pension. Right. So
I had already left here 13 years ago, so that shouldn't affect me.
I understand, yeah. So basically, you missed the boat. That's the problem.
Mr. Wickham.
No, you missed the boat. It sounds like you missed the boat. It sounds like you missed the boat. Generally speaking, people who miss the boat are some of the hardest people to make provisions for, because you exist in a gray area where you are not provided for under the new regime and you're not provided for under the old regime. But one thing that seems to be clear is that the 10 years that you serve still would not qualify you for anything. And I think that is the greater challenge that you will face.
No. The 10 years I serve would qualify me when I reach 67.
Right, when you reach 67, but it wouldn't qualify you at 45 now either.
No, it won't qualify me at 45.
Okay.
But I was saying that.
Sir,
that was very good.
I think though that that's something which I don't know whether there can be some activism on your behalf outside of what normally happens for a special provision to be made for you or persons in your category. But it sounds to me like the rules don't accommodate it, but they may very well be possible. I know that as an Army person, you cannot be part of a union, but is there no person within the Barbados Defense Force, other than the Chief of Staff, who can take up your case?
I believe so, or not, but you have to speak to the Minister of Home Affairs, Mr. Edmund Hankson.
Yeah. Well, I mean, these are the options that are available to you. You may even want to speak to your Member of Parliament and have him speak to or her. Your Member of Parliament is a lady or a man? A lady or a man?
Yeah, that's Mr. Jordan from Colin Jordan from St. Peter.
Colin Jordan. Well, like, yeah. he's a good fella. So
I think have a
conversation with him and see whether or not he is in a position to assist you. But as I said, it sounds like there is nothing that can be done for you, and a special provision will have to be made to see whether a rule can be bent or created or whatnot. The important point is that you're having hardship now, or you are okay.
No, I'm not having hardship. No, I'm okay.
Okay, so you're not urgent then. So yeah.
Okay.
No, I'm just saying in terms of the urgency. So speak to him, yeah. Okay. Down to Brass Tacks. Remember, we're on 434-1790. Myself and John Stone are with you until 2 this afternoon. I have a gentleman on the chat telling me he did 16 years in the Defense Force and he still does not receive pension. And I will say to you the same thing I said to this gentleman, that you perhaps ought to, as I said, schedule some kind of a meeting, see if you can get an audience with the Minister of Home Affairs and see if there is some resolve that can be created. Because remember, it was only 2008 when soldiers started to receive a pension in the first place. And they had a huge problem where you retire at 45 or 50, and then, or you're forced to retire at 45 or 50, and there's no pension for you until you reach 67. So a special dispensation had to be made. Someone is talking about agriculture and saying that the monkeys destroyed over 300 hoes of corn from 100 hoes of yam. I'm fighting on behalf of the farmers. I no longer have the urge to call the program anymore. Please ask the Minister of Agriculture to address this issue and find a way to decrease the monkey population. It is very frustrating and costly on small farmers who are trying to feed the household and the country. COVID has shown the importance of growing and food security, and I really look forward to having the issue addressed. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mr. Vika.
Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning. How are you? Good morning.
Good morning, ma'am. Good morning. I'm hearing you. Good morning. Right ahead.
How are you?
I am great. And yourself?
Well, I'm 99%.
You're 90%?
99.
And what happened to the other one?
99% well. I would like the Minister of Transport and Works to come to Hilby St. Andrew and have a good view of these gutters. The gutters in Moore's Bottom and Hilby are in a ridiculous state. I have been calling every since, and I can't get no person that will come and clean these gutters. The mud in front of my door is up to the top. And you know the rain is going to soon come in there real heavy. What is going on with all these gutters and this water?
Mm-hmm.
I would like something done urgently with these gutters. This is years that these gutters have not been cleaned.
Yeah. Ma'am, there's been a recent effort being made as the hurricane season started to clear a number of the gutters around Barbados. And I suspect that the area in Hillaby may very well have been missed.
This gutters has not been cleaned years.
Right.
Where is the people that clean the gutters now?
They're cleaning gutters down by me. They were cleaning gutters down by me last week, and they were cleaning gutters out by John.
Well, tell them come in Hillaby in Moore's Bottom. These gutters are in a terrible condition. We need something to be done. And the water is going to go under my house.
All right. Ma'am, I'm going to suggest that you make a call to the drainage department.
Where is the drainage department? When you call them at the place in St. Andrew, going on vacation, on lunch, on this year, and that you could never get no person. I would like the Minister of Transport Works to come and have a good view here, don't I, Louis?
No, is the MP for your area that you need?
Pardon?
The MP for your area is the person that you need.
And all right, ma'am. The roads down here is so bad.
Yeah. Ma'am, I'm hoping, as I said, I think you need to have a word with, perhaps you can call the MP for your area, call his constituency office, and this is Mr. Payne, and report to them that you're having issues with that area, and hopefully they will be able to get the drainage department, prevail upon the drainage department to come up by you and get that area cleaned up. Because they have been working their way around the island since the hurricane season started. So maybe they need a reminder that they need to get to you sooner rather than later. Okay, ma'am?
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling, ma'am. And you have a good day. And I hope that by the end of the day, the other 1% will be as good as 99% in your regard. All right? Take care. Good morning and welcome to the next caller.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning, ma'am.
Hi, Mr. Jakim. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I was listening this morning about your opening remarks, and I agree totally what you said about the Czar. Totally.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, but also, he's very strong with his language, as you said, for true. But what I'm saying is, your name is in this cliche, if Peter pays for Paul, Paul has to pay for all. Meaning, all of us has to do the same thing, everybody in the country. Yeah. Because recently I saw a video at a particular restaurant in Barbados where there was an event and nobody had a mask. Everybody had a ball, but nobody was social distancing. So I'm saying if he wants to shut down all these places and close down, put the vans off the road, is he going to shut down this particular restaurant? Mr. Wickham, you're hearing me?
I'm hearing you, ma'am. You just dropped out there for a minute. Ma'am, okay. I understand where you're coming from. What I would say is that I think we have to remember that this whole idea of social distancing does not come naturally to people. The whole idea of masking up does not come naturally to people. You have a situation where, for example, if you go into a restaurant to eat and you sit down, you don't wear a mask. If you go into a restaurant and you're served at the counter, you're supposed to wear a mask. It creates a lot of confusion in people's minds. And I think that what Mr. Carter needs to do is realize that instead of chastising me for behaving badly, that is probably better to have some training, explain to people who are working in restaurants, you know, as ushers and so on, that they need to encourage a particular type of behavior. As opposed to, I don't think that people are being, you know, they're being deliberate. The challenge is that if I go to a party, I might social distance when I'm sober. But you can't get me drunk and then tell me social distance is counterproductive. And there was an interesting study in the United Kingdom last week where they tried to look at social distancing in the context of a pub. Well, a pub that served alcohol, not a pub that served food, right? Because they have both. And they were saying that as people got increasingly drunk, they were less likely to social distance. But to start with, you can't wear a mask when you're drinking because you can't get, you know, you can't get the alcohol down your throat. But the issue of social distancing, it becomes harder when someone becomes intoxicated. So my thing is that we have to be mature about it. If we don't believe that we are ready yet to have parties, then it is better perhaps not to have the parties than to have the parties, give people alcohol, and then tell them keep a 1 foot away from each other. You know, like, can you imagine somebody social distancing and walking up?
All right, then. But then I'm seeing now in the papers, they're telling you the 20th, I can't remember the date, 2 days that they're slacking up for us to have more people out than usual. I don't understand that. So your 2 days that they're saying okay, more people could congregate, but still he's telling you one thing on one hand, and still they're having these 2 days where I think August 1st is once, which I think is Emancipation Day. I can't remember what the other day is for. But why? Every day should be the same. The COVID disease doesn't rest on particular days.
I don't want to interpret the regulation for Mr. Carter, but I think the challenge is that the numbers of people. So if you have more people out, it doesn't mean that you still don't have to social distance. So if I have 100 people at a party, I can have 200 people at a party, but the requirements for social distances are identical. And I think that is the more important point that has to be made, that it needs to be an identical social distancing, notwithstanding the fact that you have more numbers. So I don't think that the relaxation intended that we should be able to get closer than we were before. The relaxation just meant that we'd be able to have more people in venues, but ultimately you still have to keep your guard up.
Okay, just another quick point. The Minister of Health in Boston, I remember before we actually start getting back the flights, he was asked by a reporter if we are prepared when flights were coming back in, if we are fully prepared. And he said yes, because we have more equipment, we have more this. Yes, we are fully prepared. But now my flights are coming in, everyone is not being quarantined. I think that every single person that comes into Barbados should be quarantined. I know that we can't hold everyone at Paragon at that base. That's what it was. They had some hotels holding people. But I think every single person should be quarantined, because I was listening to, I can't remember who it was on the radio the other day, saying 100 people on the plane, 50 came in with their tests, and 50 don't have any. So it's only obvious that you could get the virus on the plane from somebody that you don't even know who. And then some people, and then I don't know if you heard, but I'm sure you heard about Antigua and Barbuda, where people are falsifying their tests.
Ma'am, the issue is a complicated one, and I think that we have to be careful, because if I have 2 weeks holiday and you tell me I can come to Barbados for 2 weeks, but I have to quarantine for 2 weeks, am I going to come to Barbados?
No, you're not. I understand we need money, Mr. Wickham, but at any day, we need more Bajans alive too. Because if you only have 2 weeks to come, I think you should stay. Mr. Wickham, I work in tourism ministry. I'm not back to work yet either. I got put...
You see, when you look, ma'am, at the reverse, and I know that it's difficult to make a comparison. I traveled from Barbados to France via Paris last week, and I was told on arrival in Paris that I was strongly encouraged to quarantine for 7 days, self-quarantine, basically, to stay at home for 7 days, and that I should take a test within 3 days. The point is that I left the airport with thousands of other people, and there was no requirement that I do anything. I was basically just advised and told that I should be responsible. And I have been responsible for the most part. But I'm just saying that when you look at the reverse situation, you know, I understand why it is that we in Barbados are concerned that we have people come into our zone. But what they have done is that they have determined that they're high-risk and low-risk countries. People who are coming from low-risk countries, like myself, the regime is one of encouragement. Had I come from America, if I could get into France, which is difficult to get into France from America, the regulations are very different, and there may be restrictions in terms of you come in and quarantine and so on. So I think that what we try to do is to strike a balance between the money that we need from tourism and the fact that we are assuming that people are coming from high and low risk destinations. The challenge I am having, though, ma'am, like you, is that I am concerned about the extent to which the United States of America just seems to be a high-risk destination all over. And it seems as almost every flight that we have had that comes from the United States brought in people with COVID. So it's hard. But then, ma'am, the other side of it is also interesting. Most people seem to be coming down on the flights and not going back up. And I've spoken to people in the United States of America who have said they've been under lockdown. They're not legal, they run out of money, and they need to get home. And that's another factor, that when you have Barbadians outside who are stuck and want to get back home. I mean, one lady told me that she was over there for like 6 months and she didn't really plan to go for that long. But in that period of time, she completely and totally ran out of money. They really needed to get home. But these restrictions are imposed. So it's complicated, and I appreciate your concerns. But as I said, we have to try to look at the issue holistically and understand that the pain that we are feeling is the pain that somebody else is feeling. And I really do hope that people could be more responsible, especially when they have come in, and do what I did. This is essentially self-quarantine at home for the time being.
And that's what we hope and pray people will do. Some people aren't doing it. Some people are doing it. And that's what they need to do. But we can't trust everyone. So thank you so much, Mr. Wickham. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling, ma'am. I wish you all the best. And thank you for... calling. This is Down to Brass Tacks, 434-1790. Good morning.
A blessed good morning to you, Peter.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
I am wonderful. Now, this is the Dr. Agriculture, and my name is Mr. Lane, as you would know, but I'm calling now on a professional capacity, because I heard a lady speaking this morning to you about the drainage, etc. By now, I don't know if you know that I hold a position in the NCC and National Beautification, but I will speak on that issue because I am over teams in the Christchurch area. I work directly under the Honorable Ryan Strong, so I can speak on these areas. As you said, for the last 4 weeks, a lot of cleaning was going on. Because prior to the start of the hurricane season, the NCC members and staff met with the DEO, and it was decided from the Prime Minister's office that all curbs and wells and drainage areas must be cleaned with immediate effect because it is now the hurricane season. Peter, I can tell you that there are 30 constituencies in this country, as you know, and members of staff were picked on a contractual arrangement under NCC and national verification, 12 persons under every single minister. So if there are 30 constituencies, you would understand, Peter, and you multiply that by 12, you would know the amount of general workers that have been out about the length and breadth of Barbados trying to clean the place. And as you know, it was dirty because it was a lackadaisical and tardy government before the present government, and the country was dirty. So I want persons to know that as I speak to you, there are workers going out there working very hard, debushing areas that have gotten away, cleaning the sidewalks, cleaning the curbs. And two weekends ago, Peter, the Prime Minister asked that teams work 2 weekends ago from the airport to Sam Lawrence Castle. And that was done, Peter, the Saturday and the Sunday. And the General Manager, Mr. Alves, was pleased. The Prime Minister was pleased. All the parties that were involved were pleased. So work is going on in this country. The country got away. It was in a state of disrepair. But I can speak for the area that I work in, which is NCC, National Conservation Commission, and National Beautification. That work is going on as I speak to you. But the areas have been so dirty and filthy, it will take time. But the mouth of the wells are being cleaned. The curbs are being cleaned. Areas that had trees with river tambourine, sidewalks that you could not see have been cleaned. Sidewalks that you did not know existed, you can now see them because they have been out there, especially in the Christchurch area, Christchurch East, Christchurch West, Christchurch South, and Christchurch West Central. I have been out there with teams daily, Monday to Friday, making sure that this Barbados that I love is coming back to a beautiful place. And Peter, as you know, now that the airport has been open, it was made abundantly clear that as we receive tourists gradually, we can't have the because when you leave the airport coming out, Peter, that is the first place as you drive going to the hotels, the inns, the houses, wherever you will stay. So the NCC staff is working around the clock, beautifying, cleaning, debushing, draining. And I also want to go on to say, because there are certain areas I've gone into. We went into Kingsland Heights, Kingsland, Watton, Sheraton Park, Regency Park. And the persons were glad to see us. And they treated the staff members well. Some persons would make sure they bring water and cold drinks, etc., and gifts to the staff, which is welcome. But I also want to encourage residents to join. And you, I know you're taxpayers, and you say you pay your taxes, and that's it. But that's not it. Peter, I would like to see people, especially, they don't have to go out of their boundaries or go onto anybody else's property to cause any issues. But in front of them, come up with the shovels, come up with the rakes, who have weed whackers clean around them. If they see a river tambourine tree, a clementary tree, trees that don't bear fruit, getting out of hand, just cut it down. Spray down areas before the guinea grass and the elephant grass get tall, because those grasses can grow up to 12 to 18 feet tall, especially when it is raining. So I want to tell Bajans that work is going on, yes, but I also want them to join with the hundreds of workers that are going out there and working hard daily to beautify Barbados and to also keep it clean. And I also have to say that youngsters that who really never had a respect for the country, had really never had a respect for beauty and cleanliness, have always said to me, well, look, it is only now that I am working, I realize the importance of keeping the country clean. So all those persons going out there and loading on stuff on their vans and their trucks and dumping, stop it. It needs to be stopped, because Then there are persons who will have to come out there and work behind you to clean areas where illegal dumping should never even have taken place in the first place. So, Peter,
okay.
What is going on? Okay?
Okay, Mr. Agriculture, I want to thank you for your contribution. I have a couple of people online who are saying that they do see debushing taking place, but they are concerned that many times the debushing takes place, the cleaning up is not well coordinated, and as a result, people are having to bob and weave between piles of garbage by the side of the road, and they think that this leaves much to be desired. This has been a historic complaint of people in Barbados where there is cleaning and stuff is piled up, and it's not collected quickly, and as a result, we have situations years later, weeks later, where the stuff just gets ground in by cars and different things. So it's good to hear that it's happening, but the lady was concerned about how soon it would get up in St. Andrew. So I don't know if you can speak to your people and tell them that when they're ready and finish on the south coast, that they need to move inland because there are people in St. Andrew that need some help. Down the brass tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Wickham.
Yes, sir, morning.
Hi. You know, there's a very familiar saying, excuse me, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
Mm-hmm.
You're familiar with that, right?
I am, yes.
All right. Now, I remember hearing you a couple of months ago, more or less applauding the flogging that the individual got, right, for disobeying the curfews in other jurisdictions. You remember that? You were applauding.
Yeah, I remember.
Right? So that's why I start off saying, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Now, you have a problem with desire being firm. And I do not see, let me say this on the outset, I think he's doing a fantastic job. And I would think that my own common sense would tell me he's not just speaking or saying his personal, what is his personal feeling. I think there's a body of individuals, a committee, whatever you want to call them, all the individuals that are involved in the COVID team. And they are coming to the conclusion. It is not just his opinion, okay, that he's just waking up and saying, man, I see these people, they're doing this or doing that, and anywhere in the mass, and man, I just bring down the hammer. I do not think that is what is happening. But I honestly believe you have to take a firm stance. You give, yes, it's okay, I believe we have been given some latitude, some breathing space. I see a lot of ignorance, too. As a matter of fact, the Zedder vans, these people are doing utter nonsense. And you can't even get them to wear the uniform that they're supposed to be wearing. You know? And a lot of them are not, I'm not saying all of them, but a lot of them aren't wearing the mask. This morning, you noticed, I actually did not pass one of them that wasn't wearing a mask. So that tells you, you have to be firm. Human beings are, you have to have a level or a measure of type of firmness in order for them to toward the line. If not, they'll just, you know, they'll go ahead, like happy-go-lucky. That's why you're seeing some of the videos, the parking and the fetting without masks and so on. I bet you they're not going to do that anymore. I can bet you that. They didn't take the chance. You understand? So you have to be, thoughtful about it.
Sir, let me ask you a couple of questions. Well, that's two questions, really. And the first one is that it's a kind of a rhetorical question. Do you feel that the police should be empowered to use whips and batons to beat people in parties like that? About it?
No, but that's not what he's saying. That's not what he's saying.
Okay.
He's saying. Huh? He isn't saying that.
No, I'm just checking.
No. I wouldn't.
And the second question I would ask you, sir, is that, I mean, you do appreciate that. I am a serious person, vast majority of the time. But sometimes I am prone to say things that will provoke some level of humor. And, yeah, you know, there's always a danger to taking me too seriously. I think that my views on corporal punishment are well known. And I perhaps spoke a little bit too loosely when I said that I found that the way of dealing with people who didn't want to start home and drop a lash in them, maybe that was effective. I don't know that that's my position, though, sir. So I wouldn't take that as one of my more serious thoughts. I don't know if it ever was. But I also appreciate that I have to be careful because I'm commenting in the public domain. And, you know, sometimes I realize that people like yourself all remember what I said at times like that. And it's just contradictory because if I am not supporting the flogging, then I can't be supporting the chastising, because flogging is an extreme form of chastising. When you think about it.
But that isn't chastising either. I wouldn't say that's chastising at all. He's being firm. Mm-hmm. Okay, chastising. Yeah. I mean, is a different type of position.
I'm just thinking, sir, that, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat, as I've always said, and I think that we need to be careful regarding the approach that we take. Perhaps the kind of gentler approach may be a lot more effective. What I think Mr. Carter has succeeded in doing is essentially, we are having a conversation about this on the radio today, when we could be having a conversation about change, about things that we need to do to change. And I think that the fact is that he has now become the issue. And that's the last thing that you want in a crisis.
No, I don't think he's the issue at all. Because I only hear certain individuals bring up the fact that he's being too firm. And if I may say before I go, I would like to put him in charge of the ZR vans. I think he would get through to them. You know? He would get through to them, because it doesn't seem as though everything they have tried so far has failed. You know? So
you recall, sir, that when we had that conversation, I spoke to you about an aunt of mine who is now of advanced age, but she used to work at the hospital as medical records officer. She often said that the way to deal with those minibus men is to drop the pants and give them a song whipping. And I think I made that comment at the time too, because she always said that the best way to speak to somebody who can't understand instructions is to give them a few warm ones, as she would call them.
I would penalize them, find them very heavy, and you would see. You know, find them, confine the vehicles, and you would see.
Yeah.
They would straighten up.
Those guys are special, though. Those guys are special. And, you know, the challenge is that a lot of them don't have anything personally invested in the sense that they drive a vehicle that doesn't belong to them. And as a result, they have been hard to convince that they need to behave in a certain way. If for example, the vehicle was confiscated, it's possible that they may go and drive to somebody else on the same basis. So that continues to be my concern.
Yeah.
All right, sir. Thanks a lot for calling. Mm-hmm. Good chatting, and you have a good day. Down to brass tacks. Good morning, Peter. I disagree with you. Oftentimes, human beings operate from their base nature, which often has to be controlled by external forces. The Tsar was chastising those among us who are not able to exercise the requisite self-discipline. They take the soft approach too often in this country, which is why we have many recurrent issues that we talk about over and over, in some cases for years. The PSV behavior is a prime example. If we were to accomplish the goal of controlling the spread of COVID-19 in Barbados, the occasional chastisement may and should be part of the overall management of social behavior. Otherwise, we will fail. In my opinion, Peter, I don't think the Tsar was firm enough. I think Barbadians should be ashamed that someone had to speak to reason with them in a manner on a situation as serious as COVID-19. These protocols have been explained, and now it's a common sense thing. So they need to do what is necessary to safeguard themselves, and safeguard me, and safeguard you, Peter. Final one, Peter. If law-abiding citizens get together privately to have a party and they choose not to wear a mask, that's not a matter for the Tsar. The Tsar has to stop threatening people and find a way to empower. I don't like this in a democratic society. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm good. Good to hear you.
I am not a regular caller on this program, but I have to call just now because the caller before the last one mentioned reference to a cleaning project which is going on, and he said that, well, I got the impression that he's saying that cleaning is now taking place in Barbados and we're now seeing sidewalks. That is malicious propaganda. Cleaning was, we will be having NCF or whatever it is, NCC, cleaning Barbados on a regular basis, month in, month out. And this is not the first time that a cleaning project like this has taken place. Stop fooling the public, and the ruling government has stopped spreading malicious propaganda. But like people like he that just called in, and do what they have to do. But no reference to the last government didn't do this, and the last government hasn't done that. Cleaning was taking place a long time before the last before this government has come into place, and we continue when this government goes to. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay. All right, ma'am. Thank you for setting the record straight in that regard. We want to take an... Okay. Yeah, I want to read a couple of the WhatsApp messages that are coming in from you. Just give me a minute to get my handle on them. Peter, I'm asking the Transport Board to improve on their public relations. Apparently, there has been a change of times of routes and has become a guessing game for commuters without the relevant information about these changes. We also need a real truth about the size of the bus fleet. How on earth can a person waiting 4 hours at a bus pole for a bus out of the city be right? That is ridiculous. And this long wait was on a Sunday, I am told. We have another one here. Peter, I want Mr. Carter to know he's telling Bajans to wear and follow protocols, that he doesn't follow them. I see him in town on many occasions without a mask on, so what's he trying to say? Don't tell people what to do and then not do it yourself. Of course, if Mr. Carter is wearing a mask, if he's not wearing a mask, maybe it's that he's not inside because you're only supposed to wear the mask inside. So if he's outside, perhaps he didn't have to wear a mask. Now someone else is telling me that we had 40 days with no cases until they imported the new COVID cases. And the suggestion is that the importation of these cases is something that we ought to be concerned about. Is it possible that the COVID monitoring unit could provide a telephone number to which members of the public can call in order to raise concerns that they've seen? Also, what can we do as individuals is when we go into a restaurant and bars, we see the protocols not being observed, we can gently suggest or remind patrons or staff or ask questions. And that's all of us looking out for each other. Gentleman is asking about MP George Payne, is saying that he hasn't seen him in the constituency for a while and suggests that maybe this lady may not have seen, and this is a lady I was speaking to early on, may not have seen him in the constituency either and is expressing concern about that. Then another gentleman is saying, Peter, there is cleaning going on. The gutters are being cleaned in Station Hill, for example, but stuff is not being removed. And that continues to be a problem. Okay. And then final one. Right. Okay. This is in relation to pension. He was working for 16 years and they received a pension. So anyhow, let's take another call. Good afternoon. Good morning and welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Hey, I always wanted to ask, can you speak French?
No, not much.
So how you get my
petite? The part of France I live in is kind of easy to exist without speaking French.
Is that right?
Actually, it's near the German border, so English is a kind of a convenient language for them don't speak German and who don't speak French. So,
but everybody else in the world speaks English except French people. They hate to speak English and Chinese. You
know? No, that's a misconception, anti-America. A lot of people have said that, but I have never encountered that level of hostility. But as I said, I live in an area where English is spoken in large measure. You know, I go about from day to day and seldom have an opportunity where I am forced to speak what little French I know.
Isn't it amazing when you interview athletes from other parts of the world, Serbia, Yugoslavia, Russia, all over Africa and stuff, they all speak English. But when you speak to a Frenchman, you know, he always has difficulty to speak it. You know,
there you go. This is an unusual topic for you to be covering, though, anti-America.
No, okay. Look, you know, I just wanted to say a couple. You know, when you guys speak to it's
nice to have a conversation with you that is not one that is contentious. So I appreciate that.
Okay, I'm glad to hear it. Even though there's a
you went to the party on Saturday. It was Saturday or Sunday.
Man, every day they got a party. Man, I was at so-called.
You went to the party.
I was at Soka on the Hill. I was at Soka on the Hill too on Sunday.
But they had a Soka on the Hill Sunday?
Well, you only had one person, but that's all right. I was there. I was there. I refuse not to go places because they have been cancelled. I'm sorry. And they go into the semifinals this weekend too. All right? Okay. That's just the way things are. If I would like to say at least a little suggestion here to the guys from Weeting and the St. Philip Carnival people who normally come at Christmas time. Start advertising now, my friend, because you've got a big crowd. All of we who missed the crop over coming at Christmas time. So if the guys in St. Philip listening to this, start advertising from now. Get your carnival coming. You ain't going to get a t-shirt. You ain't going to get a costume, man. T-shirts and stuff. This year going to be the biggest St. Philip carnival in the history of mankind. That's my comment. But that's on the side. Yesterday, right? I'm thinking, this is my thing, okay? That the response to COVID. All this talk about mask wearing and social distancing and every sort of thing, that's fine. If WHO tells you to say that, then do that, you say that, and you do that. But the response from countries like Barbados should be coming from the medical community, strong and clear. One, the first one should be a week-by-week expose as to really how sick Barbadians are. We are a very sick community, and COVID, like most other viruses, you know, are very opportunistic. They go look for a sick person. And it will affect us all, but the sick people, the ones who have, you know, immune systems that cannot respond the way they were designed to, are the ones who are going to suffer most. So the response should be to make Barbados a healthier community going forward. Now, I don't hear the government speaking about that, but we should be made healthier. And one way to do that is to keep reminding them as to how really unhealthy you are. Every week or 2 weeks, these statistics should be brought to Barbados. How many people have died from cancer? How many people have died from preventable diseases like hypertension? We need to have that figure every week. You know, how many people have got it now? Because 6 out of 10 Barbados have hypertension, you know. I mean, is that bad? How many people have lost limbs at the hospital because, you know, of diabetic diabetes too? You know, things like that.
Are you hypertensive, anti-America?
Man, no. I don't understand why. I like playing a couple of sports and stuff. And, you know, Bushell is a very active area. But no. No. Hypertension of a people.
No, I ask that because one of the causes of hypertension is salt. The other one is stress. And I just say that you are often a very stressed, you appear to be a stressed person. So I wonder if you have that challenge.
Sometimes when you vent helps with stress, you know, get it off your chest. Just get it off your chest and move forward. So, you mean, these calling program, I must admit, does help, you know, or you get it off your chest and move forward, right? But that's a stress.
I recall years ago, you called me a Sunday and you vented for the better part of 30 minutes. I said nothing. And you told me that you felt so much better after. So I was happy to have contributed to your mental well-being because there are so few people that I can make happy by not saying anything and just listening to them.
You should be a psychiatrist, yeah. Man. It works.
Let me just say, though, that I agree with you to some extent. I think that a part of the challenge with COVID is that COVID seems to play on people who have pre-existing conditions.
Exactly.
And I do feel that in Barbados, for a long time, we have ignored or we have played down the extent to which so many of us have pre-existing conditions. The challenge, anti-America, is that when you're like me and you spend a lot of time talking about what people should and should not be eating, right? Then I'm referred to as a food Nazi. And people like Rosemary Ali always on me telling me why don't left out the pork or whatnot. And they believe you too is have a thing with the pork. So my point is that our lifestyles are problematic. And I try to raise concerns about the fact that our lifestyles need much to be desired. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that so many of us have these pre-existing conditions. And hypertension is one thing, but the diabetes is the concern that I have. That I think that too many of us walking around with diabetes and losing limbs for those reasons. So COVID will take a turn in us worse than anything else because of the fact that we have all these pre-existing conditions. But I'm scared, though, because this is now the second occasion that we have spoken and we have agreed.
No, no, okay, no, no, give me more time. Okay, but let's keep going for that a little second more or two. Here's the thing, all right? So if the doctors make that an official policy, as opposed to one or two mavericks, which would include yourself, who will come and say, eat cold foods, cold, exercise, stop smoking, make it, you know, make sure that there is a special, machinery in place that will inform Barbados on a monthly basis the amount of people that die from these. They die, being 400 people a year. From one thing alone, I mean, this makes COVID look small. And COVID, all COVID is doing is taking over, you know, because if you have a pre-existing, that will probably kill you anyway. COVID just advances the timing. Let's bring it forward a bit further. So you're not going to say that people died of a pre-existing. You're going to say you died of COVID. Let them know how really sick Barbados is. Secondly, legislation. Because you are allowed to eat any old thing from fast foods. Fast foods will kill you. We know it. We know that salt and sugar, you know, are perhaps the two biggest enemies that face Barbadian consumers as consumers of food and beverage in Barbados, right? And legislate, make sure that there's, that means when we talk about government policy level, make sure that only a certain level of sugar is allowed in processed drinks, beverages. I mean, if you're going to sell it to the supermarkets, you cannot have over a certain amount of sugar. Be sure that you have your consumers, that Barbadians are a consumer group as opposed to as a societal group as opposed to a consumer. Legislate the level of sugar in this production. It's unfortunate, the biggest seller of sugar in the region, in soft drinks, is a doctor. He's a doctor, a medical doctor qualified. And he's selling more sugar through the region than anybody else. And I'm thinking, boy, if you want to sell that sugar now, he could go long. But once you come in...
Is it chubby man?
Yeah, don't mind. But I can tell you, he's probably better than anybody else because he doesn't even consume his own drinks. But the truth is...
No, but is he the chubby guy, right? The guy that does chubby?
Yes.
A lot of people don't know that he's a medical doctor and that he just sells sweet drinks because he makes money from it. But it's true that he's one of the most successful sellers of sugar in the region because he's made sweet chocolates and things too, no?
You see, Angostura also does a bit of that business as well, too. But the reality is that you cannot come to the public, and he didn't say this, but I'm telling you somebody did, and I can't call the name again, and say that Barbadians consume sugar and we are only here to fill that market. That should not have been said in the first place. And once it has been said, there should be legislation saying you can't sell over a certain amount per kilogram of beverage, and that let's go down that road. When you go to places like Canada and stuff, I'm sure even in France, you can't buy a sweet drink. When you buy a drink, the drink you say, but this drink tastes bland. Why? Because the government is protecting you as a consumer, making sure that if you want to take more sugar, you go and buy your own sugar, put it in your own drink. But if you're going to manufacture sugar and sell to the consumer, you know, you can't sell. That's number two. And the same for salt. You want to sell? Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was saying that I think in that regard, you're not exactly right, though, because the challenge here is that there's no market for sweet drinks in the way that there is in Barbados, because the average person doesn't drink them. And I think that they deal with that problem in a far more practical way, because people will dry juices and sweeten stuff, but there's really no market for the level of sugar and so on that we have in the Caribbean. We need to get to that stage in Barbados where we deter people based on them not wanting to buy these things.
I've
actually been involved in this project that government is working on. It's a regional project that is designed to reduce the level of sugar, and it's working on all fronts. The challenge with banning is that our surveys have shown that people react very badly to banning, because you do realize that if you ban Coke, it's hard for you to have rum and Coke.
Okay? No, but you're not going to ban it. You're just going to say if you want
to sell Coke. Is that your beverage? Is rum and Coke your beverage?
Well, if you drink alcohol or you drink things like scotch and rum, you would know that you don't even put ice in it. You just go straight. You know, if you reach that level of appreciation, unless you reach that level of appreciation, we can't have a conversation. So here's the thing, though. I'm not talking about banning anything. I'm saying if you want to sell Coke or you want to sell Buster or something, the level of sugar as an ingredient has to be contained. Otherwise, you take it off the shelf. I mean, that's not difficult. If you can legislate how people must stand behind one another and must wear a mask, some foolishness and other, you can legislate the amount of sugar that goes into a drink too. You can legislate the amount of salt that goes into a lot of these fast foods and stuff. I mean, if the people want to add their own salt, it's up for them. But if you're selling the material over the counter, you cannot sell over a certain amount of salt. That is not a difficult thing to do. Legislation, as a means of controlling human behavior, has been proven to work over the past 3 months. So let's go with it. Let's go and deal with the core issue, which means the health of the nation. Let's do it. And the third thing, coming from the medical community, and indeed our Prime Minister, who is now the most famous Prime Minister in the world right now. Everybody knows her. All she has to do, as a third response to COVID, is to get up there and say, we know when we had AIDS, we were never sure where that came from. And up to this day, nobody really knows. It just seems as if it just appeared out of nowhere. But this one, this COVID thing, we know came out of a lab in Wuhan. We know this. It's admitted from the Standard Press, the international media, everybody says this. Why has there not been a comment? Why has there not been some kind of utterance from a world leader, some kind of, you know, from the UN somewhere saying that this is completely wrong? We stand opposed to the development, to the tampering of naturally occurring items like, you know, like viruses. And what does it, unless, of course, it's for the good. You know, if you can't prove that tampering with viruses is supposed to save lives, and this is what is the result, well, therefore, let us stop it. We don't need to have nuclear proliferation in the world. We don't need to have global warming. And likewise, we do not need to have the tampering of viruses, tampering with of viruses. You know, I mean, that's a comment that needs to come from the very, very top. And there has to be some kind of campaign at the UN level that says that all of this experimentation of viruses has to stop. Because when you now go and take all of these different activities, you know, as a follow-up to COVID, and you have all the different respirators, and it's probably not even a respiratory disease anyhow. It's obviously an oxygenation thing, but not necessarily a respiratory one. And you're going to put all the specialists in place to make sure that you can contain this thing. And all of a sudden, next year, you get hit with a different kind of virus. What are you going to do? So hit it at source and start trying to draw attention to the fact that this sickness has come from a lab, and such activities has to be considered at a world level to be wrong and must be discontinued. And if the Americans and the Chinese decide not to stop, as the Americans and the Chinese probably still continue with their nuclear proliferation and their global warming exercises, well, then at least you can contain the guilt or you know, all the accusations to the one or two nations who would be found to be the greatest, you know, the ones who are least concerned about development going forward. COVID is not COVID, no. It is the threat that comes from the tampering of viruses, tampering with things that are not supposed to be tampered with. And it doesn't have to happen. I mean, and the question is, where are they doing it? Where is it being done? So if you recognize it is a modified, you know, naturally occurring substance, then speak about it in that term. And start trying to be a knee-jerk responder. Every time you get something, oh, let's go into this mode and let's do that mode. That's knee-jerk. Take the bull by the horns and say, look, we have enough. Stop this. Let me go down a different route. And forget the vaccination thing. Let me just stop the development of these things and move forward. That has to come from the very, very top.
All right. Auntie America, I want to thank you very much for your profound comments today, as always. It's always good to hear from you to lift the level of conversation that we have on these programs. Not sure if I'm all with the conspiracy theories, but nonetheless, I think that we can agree that this whole idea of manufacturing viruses for whatever reason does not seem to make a whole lot of sense, and it's perhaps something that should be banned and discontinued. Thanks again for calling.